Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
Yeah, I'm Eddie.
And I'm Steve, licensed to kill. I don't know why I said that all the way. I'm Andy.
Because you're always sultry. That's your role on this show. If you're new, Streaming Things is the show where each week we find the best, the brightest, the strangest shows and films available to watch from your home or airplane or maybe your commute to work if you're an unsafe person or you have a Tesla. In an ocean of streaming networks vying for your attention, we are your lighthouse, your beacons of broadcast. Your curators of content.
We've curated it for you guys.
Your avatars of alliteration.
Vis-a-vis.
Concordantly. Did you get that reference? I knew you would.
Oh, of course.
I assumed you would. There was that MTV Awards skit. Then the text earlier when we were kind of arguing and I said, ergo vis-a-vis concordantly.
I didn't get it.
You just let that roll? Yeah, that was a skit.
That just sounds like you. MTV Movie Awards from like 2002.
The MTV Movie Awards with Will Ferrell pretending to be the architect from Matrix Reloaded. You know how he uses a bunch of big words?
Vis-a-vis.
So he was just up there going, vis-a-vis, ergo, concordantly. It was awesome.
I just thought that was you because that's just how you talk normally.
Is that the same MTV Movie Awards where they had Jack Black as Spider-Man like coming all over the place?
I think so.
Man, that was a good one.
Good times back then. Before all the damn cancel culture, states' rights.
It's cancel culture gone mad.
People are going to use sound bites from this 10 years from now, and they're going to sound horrible.
I know.
Or they're going to play the whole thing in the same effect.
It's going to sound just as horrible.
4 stars. Some business straight off the top. You can email us. I don't know if you guys knew you could do that.
Where can they email us?
Well, it depends if they have a good internet signal.
Okay.
Andy explained the internet to me earlier. I don't want to get into it, but it's quite complicated.
Series of tubes. We all know.
Subnets, DNS servers, things like that. But tubes. If all of that is aligned, they can email us at streamingthingspod@gmail.com. That is streamingthingspod, short for podcast, @gmail.com. If that wasn't clear.
.com.
I might slip into an insulting rendition of a British accent from time to time because we just finished watching Bond film. In fact, I've watched 4 of them in 2 days. So I don't mean any offense to our UK listeners, but I can't help but I simply can't. You can also become a Patreon supporter by going to patreon.com/streamingthings. And shout out to our current Patreon supporters, Phil, Carmelita. You can pipe in anytime, Steve.
With what?
Carrie. If you want to shout some names.
Carrie.
Enza. Daniel.
Daniel.
Katie.
Katie.
And last but certainly not least, Cake.
Thank you, Cake.
Thank you, Cake, for being so sweet.
Oh, here we go. There's Cake. Thank you. I really hope
long.
She.
Wait.
I want people to know that it's a nice woman named who goes by the name of Cake online, and not the band Cake is a supporter.
Correct.
Of
the show. They went through some drama that I don't want to be associated with. What are the words?
I don't know. I'm struggling.
Long, long distance, always through such strong resistance. First you said, you're too busy. I wonder if you even miss me. Never there.
Oh, it starts with, I need your arms around me. I need
to feel your touch. Yeah. You're not a fan of that song, Steve?
I just don't know the words.
You're the music guy. That's a banger. That's a bop. I did a lot of ecstasy to that song circa 2007.
That's not the Cake song that I have committed to memory.
Shut the fuck up. Is that yours, the one you have committed to memory?
No.
Shut
the fuck up. Mine's probably like Going the Distance or...
Oh, that's a good one.
Or what's the one where he's like, he is calling me dude.
That's a good one. It's a banger.
Yeah.
A lot of bops. But anyway, yeah, you can do that. Patreon.com/streamingthings. You can also follow us on Twitter @StreamThingPod. That's @StreamThingPod. It's a... All the other ones were taken.
Yep.
True story.
So
true story.
I don't know why streaming things days. Pod was taken. That seems unfair. Anywhoozle.
Probably change it.
So what we got in store for you today, No Time to Die is going to debut to the world, I believe, on October 8th. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Which, fun tidbit, it was originally set to release on March 31st of 2020. So
like a year and a half ago.
Yeah. About a year and a half. We've been waiting for this film, which was completed at that time. But there was a lot of COVID concerns and issues. So that's crazy. And so in honor of that and Daniel Craig's last, foray.
Hoorah.
As Bond, James Bond. Yeah. Hoorah, if you will. We wanted to pay homage to that. And so we're going to be talking about.
You pay homage.
Daniel Craig's entire oeuvre this evening. So if you're a Bond fan, you're in for a treat. And if you're not, well, it might be a miserable hour.
Could be worse.
I don't know what to tell you. Yeah, perhaps it could be a 4-hour discussion of the extended Lord of the Rings for six people. That's what it could be.
We love you, six people.
It could be way worse. One of which wanted it to be over. At least one of, actually two of which, because I know Phil hates Lord of the Rings.
I wanted it to be over too.
Yeah, that's three of us. Three of the nine.
And I love those movies.
It's okay. We just made sure we didn't love them anymore. Anywhoozle. So that's what's in store for tonight. But first, we're going to do our classic, much beloved Crossing Streams segment. Crossing Streams is the segment where each week we delineate the films and shows we've been watching since last we met. And dear listener, you might notice that the three of us have not been all together in quite a long time.
We have not crossed a stream together in an age.
We were together last week, but that was a Patreon episode, so only six of you knew that. So for the rest of you.
Oh, shit, I didn't think about that.
We're back.
This is the first time that Chris and I have shared a microphone together since you went on your honeymoon.
Mm. Mm.
Yes. Mm.
Yes. Mm.
Since I got off the market.
Little do people know that we actually do share a microphone, like I am an inch away from your lips right now.
Yeah, nothing about this is COVID safe.
Here, let us breathe on each other.
I actually just smelled it. We don't share a microphone. That was all for your pleasure.
Wink.
So, Andy.
Guys, I'm so hard right now.
What have you been streaming other than Banana Ladies?
It's been a little time on the hub, gentlemen. So last night I
watched hub.
What hub? Let's see, Destiny Hub.
Oh, good. Yeah, good save, my friend.
Nailed it. Last night I watched Free Guy, the Ryan Reynolds.
Oh yeah. Flick.
Dude, that was good. So they announced it and I was like, oh shit, a video game movie NPC comes to life that with Ryan Reynolds and Taika Waititi is going to be in it. That sounds like my jam. And then the trailers came out and I was like, that looks like a cash grab. I'm getting the Adam Sandler pixel vibes. I'll pass. Then Chris said it was really good. And I was like, you know what? I'm gonna watch it. So I was hanging out with my girlfriend last night and we were just scrolling the hub and then the flicks trying to find out what to watch. And,
She's on the Destiny Hub too?
She is indeed on the Destiny Hub. She's down.
She rides the D?
She rides the D-Hub. But yeah, we saw that Free Guy was available not to rent, but to purchase for the same price as like a early rental, which is $20. Mm-hmm. So it felt like a steal. And so I bought it and I watched it.
Do you have like access to it forever?
Yeah. I do. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I
just bought that Apple shit, TV. Steve.
Hell yeah.
$20.
So Free Guy was in fact $20.
$20.
Mm,
that seems false advertising.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I know, right?
More like $20 guy.
Am I right?
Right? Andy, am I right?
Am I right, Andy?
High five me.
That's the most uncomfortable high five ever.
Good.
His fingers were splayed.
I was looking angled at me. And I had my eyes wide open like a deranged person.
But anyway,
my $20 guy.
My $20 guy. It was really good. It was super funny. Lil Rel, I feel like, was slightly underutilized in it. I felt like there should have been a little more opportunity for him. But ultimately, you know, it was absolutely.
Well, there was as much Rel as was advertised.
Absolutely. That's pretty good. It was absolutely the Ryan Reynolds show. And you know what you're getting into with one of his movies nowadays. It's just him being clever and witty and endearing and sexy and hot and steamy. Anyway.
I mean, we've all seen a Ryan Reynolds movie.
Yeah, yeah. We've all been there. No, I'm saying
they even may put him on like a stronger, more muscular person at one point in the movie, don't they?
I love that catchphrase.
They do. We haven't inserted that in the code yet.
Don't worry, you are adjective. I love that shit. But yeah, it was the action was super fun. It had kind of like Ready Player One vibes, but better. It was not like an Easter egg driven thing, but like had little Easter eggs throughout, which was fun. They got to reach into the Disney chest of toys during the climax, which was a lot of fun. Spoilers, so I'm not going to go any further than that. Let's just say it was a movie that was produced under a company that is owned by Disney, and because of that, they had access to Disney things. And so let your imagination run with what they might have done.
And it was a
lot of fun.
Free guy.
Other than that.
But it's not free.
I have been hardcore binging Dexter on Amazon Prime.
Oh.
I have finished the first.
Godspeed, sir.
I finished the first two seasons so far, and I am now on to the third. Chris and I watched the first season, maybe season and a half, years and years ago, back when we used to live together, which I had completely forgotten about. And so I was watching the first season, like, didn't remember. And then, like, three quarters of the way through the season, I'm like, oh, yeah, that guy's the killer. I remember that.
I think I watched more than that. I think you're underestimating how much time we had. What season is John Lithgow in?
That's four, I think, right?
Yeah,
Jimmy Smith's is in three.
I have no memory of John Lithgow being in it at all. I'm now in season three, and I'm Gandalf in the minds of
how many seasons are there?
I have
do you know that?
This place. Eight.
Okay, I'm pretty sure we watched like five of them.
Really?
But we were on lots of drugs.
Didn't they just announce that they're making another
Yeah, that's why he's watching
it. That's why I'm watching it.
Okay.
They're going to redo that famously atrocious ending.
Is this what you guys were talking about while I was gone? Talking about Dexter while I'm out?
No, are you a big D fan?
No, I literally...
I'm a big D fan.
I was huge into it, so I watched the first three seasons, and then I never watched the John Lithgow season, even though I know that's supposed to be like really, really good.
Yeah, that's a good one.
But it was one of those things where like, oh, I'll get to it. But then by the time I was had the opportunity to go back to it, it had already like shat the bed and people were already saying how awful it had become.
It's
but
like one of those like things where it's like people are talking about how bad the ending is. It'll just like, well, why waste my time?
Yeah.
And for that reason, and this might shocketh some listeners, I have never watched Lost because
I am shooketh.
They famously hate the ending, but now it's surfacing. I've seen all these writers I respect like the ending's actually pretty good, and I'm bastards,
I don't hate the ending to Lost. See? I actually love Lost. I'm a huge Lost fan.
So there is that. Love Lost for me.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, dude, I want to watch Lost again now. That was a great show.
Let's bro out.
Yeah. Let's be like, hey man,
give each other some bro jobs,
man. If we die together, we die alone. Okay, yeah, that's a thing they say.
Yeah. What?
Oh. Yeah, man. You got Morty on us. Yeah, we can die together or we can die alone, you know?
Dude, I think episode 4 of season 1 and Lost changed the way I thought of TV forever. Mm. Because Lost was made like right around the time where it was like, oh, wait, we can make TV shows good.
That's what they say. They say it is one of the, you know, beginnings of premium television, as they say.
For sure.
Anyway, Andy Dexter, anything else?
So Dexter has been absolutely fantastic. Let me just say, I said a little bit about, like, I feel like I'd watched it before, but fuck, the writing is good. Mm-hmm. And like, so there's a constant sort of like monologue running through his head that's just like him narrating, but it's like really poetic and like dark and meaningful and stuff. And there's so many quick throwaway lines that I'm just like, fuck, that was deep. And they've already moved on to something else. And I feel like that's excellent writing. You know, it's like they don't like stop and make you wait and think about what they just said. They're just like, they drop a truth bomb on you and then move on to, Deb being annoying. But other than that, like,
oh yeah, Deb was annoying.
She's pretty annoying. not a big fan. Like,
oh, and you get, what's his name? Dokes.
Is that Dokes? Yeah.
Surprise,
yep.
Motherfucker. I love that guy.
He's awesome. He's super awesome. And I super love Angel. I just love the cast of characters. They do a really good job.
And there's that really creepy bald forensics guy that's super creep.
Just like constantly dropping like sex jokes and shit.
Yeah.
I identify with him for sure.
Oh, you do?
Very much.
Are you a sex pest?
But yeah, Dexter has been absolutely phenomenal. I'm also watching Midnight Mass, and I almost said Black Mass. Midnight Mass, I'm about halfway through that, and I'm enjoying the fuck out of it so far, but I'll stop there because I haven't finished it.
I have a question about Midnight Mass. Is that the same people who made, like, Haunting of Hill House and Bly Manor? Yes,
Mike Flanagan.
Mike Flanagan.
He apparently originally wrote it as a novel and then adapted it into be a limited series.
Because I'll be honest with you, I did not hear about Midnight Mass until Chris texted it the other day about how much he's been enjoying it. And I was like, what is this? And then almost as if everyone was in the same boat as Chris, because Chris, you texted that to us that you were loving it. That same night, I hop on Twitter and I get like 10 tweets from people who are like, Midnight Mass is so good. And then one tweet who's like, Midnight Mass sucks.
Unfollow that person.
Yeah, so far it's amazing. I also watched Ouija, Origin of Evil, which is also Mike Flanagan written and directed, which was fantastic for being PG-13. And it has some
is
of
that
the
a horror movie from like the late aughts?
No, it was
a few years ago.
5 years ago, maybe.
Sequel to Ouija.
Which was famously bad. And then
that's the one I'm thinking of, because I know I worked for one of those at the movie theater.
And then the follow-up ends up being amazing. And so that was super good. Also, last night I rewatched Don't Breathe, the Fede Alvarez original horror flick starring Jane Levy, which is streamable on Amazon?
Question mark. I have no idea.
Amazon, pretty sure. Man, you were so sure about that. You said it. Amazon?
Confidence. Steve, what have you been streaming?
Well, as you all know, the last 2 weeks have been a bit of a bear for me, especially yesterday.
Would it be a Yogi Bear or a Berenstain Bear?
You know the bear that tore apart Leonardo DiCaprio in that movie? It was that bear.
Chuck was his name.
Chuck, yeah, fucking Chuck. No, I was supposed to move into the new apartment yesterday, but shenanigans happened, and I'm not going to have power in my new apartment until Monday. We're recording now on Saturday, and the movers didn't show up because they just took me off the schedule, so I won't be actually moving into my apartment until 4 days after I was supposed to. And because of that, all my shit's boxed up, so I've just been like, well, what can I watch on my Apple TV? This is the only thing I have out of the box. So I... last night I was able to, because like, oh, well, I'm not moving and I've got nothing else to do because all my shit's packed. So I kind of sat down last night and just watched a fuck ton of stuff.
Nice. Awesome.
I watched, so a lot of stuff is kind of stuff we've already talked about. So I've continued watching Ted Lasso. I did get back into Marvel's What If, and I've almost completely caught up. And that show continues to be very hit or miss for me. Mm. There are some episodes that are a lot of fun, and then there are other episodes that are like, that's stupid. Why'd I waste a half hour watching this? I also gave Star Wars Visionaries a shot. Is it Visionaries or Visions?
I think it's Visions.
Visions.
How is that?
I've only seen the first episode. First episode was really cool. The animation style for that first episode is very reminiscent of Kurosawa. It's got this black and white, but this grainy, flickering film texture to it. But it's like 3D animated at the same time. And the only things that are that show up in color are any of the blasters or lightsabers.
Oh, shit. That's cool.
And there's this long running joke I have with a friend of the show, Phil, that every time there's a new Star Wars property, they have to be like, all right, guys, let's sit down and figure out what's the latest crazy design on a lightsaber we can come up with. In Phantom Menace, it was the double-bladed lightsaber. Whoa.
Attack of the Clones, it was a slightly bent one.
It was a slightly bent one. And in Revenge of Sith, it was like, now he has four arms that spin. and then in the sequel trilogy, they're like, it's a broadsword. You know, Kylo Ren's lightsaber. Mm. This first episode of Star Wars Visions was like, let me take that challenge and fucking punt it out of space, because no one will ever top how ridiculous this lightsaber design is. It is literally, I was showing Chris earlier, it's literally an umbrella. Imagine an umbrella and the little, what do you call it? The veins that...
Ooh, I like being veiny, but the spines,
Spines, the metal spines that create the pieces where the fabric kind of meshes together. Imagine those are all just lightsabers, and she's spinning around, cutting dudes. And the whole time, like, how does she fight another lightsaber user with that thing? And the answer might surprise you. The answer is she doesn't. She takes it off and just holds one of them.
This is unwieldy.
She's like, this is just to make the normies think I'm cool. But it's definitely like, it's nothing storyline wise. It's nothing incredible.
So is this like the Star Wars equivalent of the Animatrix?
Basically, like, yeah.
Different styles for each one and tangentially tie into the overall.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's a good comparison. Like, if there's different art styles and the stories, you know, again, I've only seen the first episode, but from what I can gather, they're not really connected, but maybe they are at the end. I don't know. And they're not canon. And they're just weird shit. Like, I guess they can just try weird stuff, and it's cool. It's definitely a creative, it's definitely very, very creative. So if you want to watch some good animation and good creativity, go check that out. The other thing that I have been watching, and I feel like a bastard because I already forget the title of the show, but it is on Apple TV Plus. It is Jon Stewart's new show. The Problem with Jon Stewart. That's the name of it. Yeah, thank you, Andy. So it's on Apple TV Plus. Were you guys ever a fan of like The Daily Show back in the day?
I was, very much so.
So I loved The Daily Show growing up. That was such a pivotal part of my, you know, youth. It's kind of what got me into, you know, maybe I should pay attention to politics. Oh, the guy who makes jokes makes it easier to digest. And also, he, for some reason, is way more reliable than real news people, which is kind of fucked up. But of course, when I found out that Jon Stewart was going to have another show, I had to watch it. And his show, it's very different than what I thought it was going to be. So the conceit behind the show is, you know how like Last Week Tonight, John Oliver, you have like the opening bit where he kind of tackles several news stories and then he does like a 20-minute deep dive into one particular issue. Mm-hmm. Or imagine, so Jon Stewart's show is basically that last 20 minutes of John Oliver's show, but over the course of an hour, talking about one topic with way fewer jokes. It's like not meant to be like funny, really. I mean, he has some jokes, but at least in this first episode, it didn't really land.
Okay.
It wasn't very funny, but it was like definitely talking about like an important subject that I myself wasn't super aware of. And they talked specifically about how the veterans, the VA in America isn't paying for, you know, cancer-related problems that veterans have from serving overseas, specifically from what's called fire pits. I guess you'd have your military base in Iraq or Afghanistan, and you know those bases have a lot of waste, like human waste, you know, garbage. So what they do is just right next door to the base, they create these giant fire pits and just burn everything and throw jet fuel on it and light it on fire. But all that stuff in there, you're not supposed to burn. because it just releases carcinogens and shit in the air, and all that stuff blows into the veteran or the troops base, and like so many people are getting cancer and lung scarring from it, and like the VA's like refusing to say, oh, there's no real evidence that your cancer has to deal with that, even though clearly it is. Like they had like a guy who's younger than me, he's like 27, and his lungs are scarred. He has to breathe a CPAP machine, and it's because he had to work that fire pit. That was his main job.
He was the poop burner.
Yeah. And it was kind of messed up. And so I'm glad I watched it, but it really wasn't what I was expecting, because I was expecting like another Daily Show. But instead I like walked away with feelings, you know? So that is the problem with Jon Stewart. And also it's interesting how they set it up. They open every segment with production meetings.
Huh.
So it's him and like the producers and the writers, and they're talking about like, what do we need to do to sell this story? We need to talk to these people. You go here, and you can kind of see this kind of behind the scenes view into how they construct the show.
But that's not scripted. They just have a camera running?
Supposedly.
Okay.
I mean, it's TV, so it could be scripted. Who the fuck knows? But they at least the intent is to make it seem like it's a natural, you know, back and forth of a production meeting.
Peeking behind the curtain.
Because at one point they're talking about, who do we talk about for this subject? And then Jon Stewart says like, you know, I can't, we're talking about something very serious, but I can't stop laughing because the number one note on our board that has a star next to it says snake penis.
Let's talk to him.
Let's talk to snake penis. Chris, do you know, speaking of snake penis,
I'm Googling snake penis and nothing that I can talk about is coming up.
Oh, dang it. But that is what I've been streaming. So, Chris, I know you can't find snake penis, but what have you been streaming?
Other than that, I have been streaming some things. So I watched a new film. It is available for free on Netflix, starring Kristen Ritter. It's a new film called Night Books. Have either of you seen that advertised or checked it out at all?
No.
So it's sort of a children's horror film. And in fact, that's exactly what it is. Sort of along the goosebump, an Arl Steinian vein, if you will. But I had a lot of fun watching this with my son, and I probably would have enjoyed it had he not been there. So if you're ever looking for something light to watch, Kristen Ritter's having a ball. It's a take on Hansel and Gretel. Hansel and Gretel. But it's also kind of an homage, or not homage, but a salute to writers, young writers specifically. So it's about this little boy, and he writes scary short stories, but he's vowed to not write any more scary short stories for reasons. And he gets basically kidnapped by this wicked witch, who played by Kristen Ritter, and forced by her to read her a scary story every night that he has written. And there's also plot reasons why she actually wants that are revealed later. So that's the conceit. It's fun. It's super fun. Had a good time. Kristen Ritter's great. And so I would check that out if you literally can't find anything to watch.
Was that based on a kid's book?
No, it's just a take on Hansel and Gretel. Like by the end, it's Hansel and Gretel's a huge part of it. Yeah.
I love Kristen Ritter.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, ever since Breaking Bad, I was like, who the fuck is that?
Dude, she's everything she's been in, like Breaking Bad, even though I haven't seen that. But Breaking Bad, even the B in 23, was that what it's called? The B in Apartment 23? I loved her in that. And Jessica Jones.
Boom. She hasn't been in enough things for as talented as she is.
Veronica Mars? She was great in Veronica Mars.
I didn't see any of the Veronica Mars movies. Even though I love Kristen Bell as well. Both the Kristens. And as Andy alluded to, I've also been watching Midnight Mass. I binged all of it. It's only 7 episodes. So that's a nice limited series length, I feel like.
Is it spooky?
It is, but also not really. It is much more, what would you say?
Is it Haunting on Hill House spooky, which is not super spooky.
Not even close to, I feel like Hill House has some genuinely scary moments. This so far has not had any of those.
Okay.
It's more like allegory.
I think it's even less spooky earnest. Than Hill House.
Okay.
For me, but this is one of the most well-written things I have ever seen. And now there's elements of this show that have to do with religiosity and like human experience with spirituality and specifically alcoholism and recovery. So, I mean, this is could not be more my jam to me personally. So that's a huge caveat to those that might not connect as much with it as I did. But, you know, from a screenwriting perspective, purely, there are so many, I can't wait till Andy finishes it so I can talk about these little nuggets that Mike Flanagan leaves, because it's written, directed by Mike Flanagan. He just does these very subtle things that work super well in their own context. And then later they get completely recontextualized and operating on an entirely different level. And of course, a lot of people are good at that. Like Christopher Nolan's really good at that, right? Like second, third rewatches, something that was wonderful in its own right is completely recontextualized now that you know, right? So, but doing that over a 7 and 8 hour period, I think just is its own skill. Like when you find something out in episode 6 or 7 that just completely recontextualizes the smallest throwaway moment from episode 2. And it just gives you one of my greatest pleasures when I'm watching a film or a TV show of that just, aha, I get it. I see what you did there. And thanks for letting me in on this. So I'm just literally floored by Midnight Mass. It's literally one of the best things that I've seen this year, without a doubt, and ever, I think. So I would highly recommend that to anyone who is a big fan of storytelling done well. I also went to a double feature the night before last on Thursday night. It's the weirdest double feature ever. I saw Titane, which I don't know how you pronounce that. I've seen people online saying how they correctly pronounced it once. And that made me question whether or not I was pronouncing it correctly, because Titane is the obvious go-to, right?
What are they saying?
I don't know. It's text. So I can't see. But I saw Titane, the new Julia Ducournau film. She debuted recently with the film Raw in 2016. One of my favorites of that year, if not the favorite, I think. And then Venom, Let There Be Carnage, the Venom sequel. So I saw that on the same night. And I can't really explain to you why. It's been a long time. So first, I saw Titane. Now, again, her first film, Raw, was one of my favorite movies of all time. So I've been looking forward to this forever. And this movie is bonkers in all of the best and worst ways. She is a master of body horror. And so I was literally found myself almost unable to watch at certain points, which is hard to get me to that place. I'm pretty sadistic. But I was squinting, not quite closing my eyes, but squinting and grimacing and like slightly turned away for multiple scenes. It's extremely sexual in the worst way, like sort of like Cronenberg's Crash, if you've ever seen that. Yeah, so there's a lot of that. But, you know, she's stunning. It was gorgeously shot. There's a oneer early on that's really, really well done. And it's kind of funny, like, it's almost hilarious at times. So I would highly recommend everyone run to go support the new Neon film.
Is that zombie Titane song in it?
No.
They play that. That's such an awkward song to throw into the trailer for that movie. I was like, oh, that song has to play
like the Cranberries,
unless they do.
No, the band, the Zombies. She's Not There song that played in the trailer.
It was like a symphonic version of it that they just, you got to use the real version for the trailer, but that's not something that stood out to me if it did.
Okay. But you know what I mean, right?
Like, wait till you see it. You will be, it is literally one of the most fucked up, wonderful things I've ever seen. That's all I'll say. But Andy, you asked me earlier, did you have a nice long break in between the two movies, right? Mm-hmm. And I had planned it out that way. Neither of these movies are very long. Titane, I think, runtime is 1 hour and 48, and Venom is only 90 minutes. So the first show started at 6:15, and so I thought it would let out, you know, early 8 o'clock-ish, mm-hmm. And then I'd have almost 40 minutes before Venom started in IMAX at 8:45. But the most trailers I have ever seen in my life, and I have been to the movies hundreds and hundreds of times. I used to work at a movie theater. The trailer reel for Titane, of all fucking movies,
like, what?
Was like pushing 30 minutes.
Are you serious?
It was about 14 trailers. I almost lost my fucking mind. And then, first time in my life, halfway through the film, and I can't tell you, there's no spoilers I'm allowed to give you, because I didn't know anything about what this movie was about, and it is fucking insane. Like, David Lynch would be like, I don't like this. Like, it is insane. Right as the climax is reaching its apex, the fire alarm goes off in the movie theater.
Oh no.
And the movie is weird enough that I didn't know it was in real life IRL that it was happening. Because it's like, burr, burr, burr. And I'm just like, huh, weird sound choice.
bah, it's like our Candyman experience.
Yeah. And I see lights going off in my peripherals, and I'm like, wow, that's a really interactive experience. Like, I'm literally that dumb. And everybody's getting up, but nobody's alarmed. We're all, like, there's a guy behind me goes, God damn it. And I stand up. Nobody wants to be the first one to leave. Like, it's an ego thing. Like, I'm not scared.
Yeah.
But because of the vibe of the movie, I don't know why I'm sharing this, but I actually got genuinely frightened. I never thought it was a fire, but I thought it was like a early aughts Dark Knight scenario.
Oh, okay.
Do you know what I mean?
You mean present day America scenario?
Yeah. I literally, my brain went straight to active shooter, and I just looked at my friend and I was like, what do we do?
He's like, gonna die.
I guess we walk out. And but then it all faded instantly, and we just went to the bathroom, and everybody was directed out of the theater. So they made us all leave. We stood there for literally a minute, and then they brought us all back in. Somebody burnt some popcorn or something is my guess. So between the trailers and the fire alarm, I'm now in danger zone. And so Venom started at 8:45. Titane ended at like 8:47. So I literally had to run to the bathroom and then straight into Venom.
Venom.
My review of that movie is it's fun.
Was there carnage?
Did
they allow
the
carnage?
The only carnage was Woody Harrelson's wig, which was really, bothersome.
It looked better than the first Venom wig that he had.
That's fair.
He lost the, whatever the fucking, what's the Sideshow Bob, the guy from Simpsons? He had that hair.
Yeah, Sideshow Bob.
Movie. Yeah.
My review of Venom, Let There Be Carnage, is that it is mercifully short. And I don't even mean that in like the pissy way that it sounds like. But it's a brisk 90 minutes. That is the perfect length for a goofy ass movie, right? My real take is that I love
R rated goofy movie, a goofy ass movie.
I love Tom Hardy. I think as much as any man on the planet, perhaps more. Andy's well aware of this.
Listen to each other now, motherfucker.
Like the guy from Old School covering it. He always drops F bombs in there. But I think that Venom as a character is awesome, but I hate when he carries his own movie. I think that they're silly and it's a little much to ask for. But if Venom were to ever be a part of someone else's movie in like the MCU or something like that, I think it'd be a wonderful addition. I just don't think he can carry a whole movie. So that's my take on Venom. Those are the things that I watched, and have a good night out there, all you cool cats and kittens.
Oh yeah, they're having a Tiger King 2.
There is a Tiger King 2 coming.
What, really?
Yeah, I don't know.
Who's the new Tiger King?
It's still him, just from jail.
It's just him like, that Carol Baskins put me in here.
That fucking bitch.
I had another boyfriend in prison. He killed himself too.
I'm still broke as shit.
Donald Trump didn't pardon me. Motherfucker.
I don't know why I voted for him. So I did want to mention there's a show on Netflix called Squid Game. It's kind of Battle Royale-esque. Have you seen this, Steve?
My hairdresser was literally telling me about this today.
So we haven't watched it yet. I'm going to watch it as soon as we're done recording, and you'll hear my thoughts next week. But here's a fun tidbit. Squid Game is the most watched thing on Netflix ever of all time. Orange is the New Black, anything. Ever. Really? Squid Game is driving so much traffic in South Korea that a broadband provider is suing Netflix because it's using all of the bandwidth. That's a real thing.
That's what? Oh no, people are using our service too much. Darn.
we're running out of internet, Steve.
Oh God.
And then last thing before we get into the Bond coverage, which will probably, like Venom, also be mercifully short. This is the rest of the October releases, that just in case you guys forgot, this is how fucking stacked it is. I already saw Venom and Titane. Next week we have No Time to Die. Many Saints of Newark is out today. Reviews are middling. Then we got Dune, Halloween Kills, The French Dispatch.
Hell yeah.
The Last Duel, Ridley Scott's possibly last movie.
Hell yeah.
Last Night in Soho.
Hell yeah.
And Lamb, which before you scoff.
Oh yeah.
Those movies are always badass. First Cow and Pig got rave reviews. I think Lamb's going to come in hot as the third of the trilogy.
Dude, I can't wait for Lamb. Can we watch Lamb together? But the caveat be that I get a little too tipsy.
I was going to say, you have to be as drunk as you were when we saw the trailer. Because you were super happy.
I've never been more pleased with a trailer in my life.
Candyman!
Candyman!
Which I still haven't seen Candyman either. That brings us to our main event, our James Bond coverage. I'm sorry, our Bond, James Bond coverage. Take it away.
Oops.
Andy's on guitar.
No one's wife is safe.
I'm just saying, Andy literally practiced, what, a minute before we started recording
that? You buddy.
Perhaps
too. I wonder if I can do it. And they just fucking nailed it, like, just off the top of your head. Like, oh, we need some work.
He was shaking.
I fucked it up.
But not stirred.
Oh.
Ooh. It's like if Metallica did it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, that's not how Metallica would do it.
That's exactly how they would do it if they were drunk and terrible. So anyway, we just watched Spectre. I've actually watched all of the Daniel Craig oeuvre over the last 2 days. We're very excited for No Time to. Are we though? I mean, what is your relationship with James Bond as a whole throughout your life? Just real quickly, and then we'll go through some trivia. Do you even want me to deep dive through Spectre?
I don't know if it's necessary to deep dive through Spectre.
We did just watch Spectre. Has that been mentioned?
Yes. Thanks for zoning out, though.
Okay. Yeah, no problem. I got you, man.
So, yeah, Andy, what is your relationship with James Bond? Do you have one?
I'm sorry, what was the question? I love the shit out of James Bond. I was a big fan of Pierce Brosnan, Bond specifically. I have not watched all of them. I've seen like a couple of the Sean Connery ones. I've seen a couple Timothy Dalton's. I was a big fan of Daniel Craig as Bond when it came out, and they kind of lost me with Quantum of Solace. I thought Skyfall was very, very good, but I don't like how much they tie into each other to where it necessitates a rewatch before you see the next one. So they've kind of lost me with how they are becoming more, I don't know if it's iterative is the right word, but like
less serialized.
Yeah. Less serialized, because to me, I feel like James Bond should be standalone.
That was going to be one of my biggest talking points for this episode, was that Daniel Craig's Bonds are linear. Mm-hmm. There's an arc, whereas everyone else is episodic.
But it's convoluted and confusing and unnecessary for what Bond traditionally is. And so, like, I love the fuck out of Casino Royale, because it was just like introducing the new young gritty Bond, even though he's not young, but you know what I mean? It's like an inexperienced Bond. Shaken or stirred, I don't give a fuck.
Well, the character had just been promoted to 00 status, I believe, in Casino Royale. Mm-hmm. But Daniel Craig, when he took that role, was about, I think, 36.
Oh, shit. Was he that young?
I think it was 38 when it came out.
36, 38. Something. Yeah. Late 30s.
Wow. Yeah.
A little bit older than I am now.
So he's in his 50s now for this one. Yep. God damn, that dude doesn't age.
50's a new 30.
That, well, I should take that back. He aged a lot young, apparently, and then just stayed there. But
some guys are like that. You just hit 40 when you're 20, but you stay there for 50 years. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I enjoy them a lot, but I can't call myself a super fan or anything.
Do you prefer? Oh, I'll ask that. Remind me to ask this question after Steve's done. Steve, I have a feeling that you are a huge fan of the entire Bond franchise. And my prediction of that is based on your love of other things British. And so am I right?
So no, not so.
Doctor No.
Doctor No. So James Bond, I do like James Bond. So I don't want to say like I don't like James Bond. I would describe myself as a huge fan, because James Bond's one of those movie franchises that if a new one comes out, yeah, I'll always see it. Right. But it's also one of those things, like if I watch it one time, I'm good. I don't need to see it again. I got it. I'm good. I'm more of a Mission Impossible person if I had to pick my spy
thing. That was going to be my question. Sure. Do you guys prefer Mission Impossible or Bond?
Personally, I'm a Mission Impossible person.
Same.
Okay.
But I do. They are fun. I mean, growing up, I don't remember what television channel it was, but every year this this cable was that would be great. Every year on a cable channel, there was a Bond movie marathon, and it went on all of December. So December 1st through, I think actually it ended on Christmas. So Christmas was the last day they did it. But it was like for most of the month of December, they just would play.
I remember that.
The James Bond movies back to back. TNT or something. Yeah. Yeah. Something like that. And that is how I watched all of them, because I don't think my family owned any of them, like on VHS or DVD or anything. But we would always just sit, oh, hey, it's that time of year. Let's watch. Have you seen From Russia with Love? No. Let's see what's going on. And but because of that, I don't know if I've seen every single James Bond movie. Like, I cannot tell you if I've seen Dr. No. I don't think I have.
I feel like the answer is in the name.
Doctor?
I don't recall. My dad used to watch the Sean Connery versions a lot. And so I've seen pieces of all of them. But like, no, I have never as an adult sat down and watched Dr. No. Or those, the rest.
Whichever one Lazenby was Bond, I don't think I've seen that one because I have no
That's
memory.
A made-for-TV one, right? Because a lot of the lists don't even count him.
Yeah.
It's like some of, there have been 27 Bond films spanning almost 60 years, just for your knowledge, based on the 12 books and two novellas that Ian Fleming wrote, starting in 1962, October 5th, when Dr. No was released as Sean Connery. I don't think I've seen any of Roger Moore or Timothy Dalton, which is crazy to admit. A lot of people think that those two are the better Bonds, some circles.
Timothy Dalton is underrated. I always did like his James Bond. He was definitely the most violent, I think, the movies were. Mm. But I think he's definitely underrated. Plus, Timothy Dalton's awesome. You know, yeah. He's a great dude.
So it sounds like none of us are qualified to answer some of these questions. However, I'll do it anyway. Andy,
yes.
Who is your favorite Bond?
Pierce Brosnan. Yeah,
wow.
They're the ones I grew up with. So I watched the fuck out of GoldenEye and The World's Not Enough and
Die Another Day.
So for you, no, Christmas. Not that one. So for you, Christmas did come more than once a year,
dude. And plus, like playing the fucking GoldenEye video game nonstop. Forever.
Most of my Bond fandom comes from GoldenEye on 64.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which is crazy, but.
I mean, if I'm
invincible, like I watched that a lot.
If I'm being real, I mean, the Daniel Craig ones are better. I just have more fond memories of the Pierce Brosnan ones.
And that's fine. You could still like a Bond's portrayal of the character better and the movies as a whole less, you know. Yeah. So that question means whatever you want to make it. Steve, who is your favorite James Bond?
You know, I've been thinking about this lately, and I think I am going to go with Daniel Craig. Actually, and I don't know if that's a recency bias thing, but I really like Daniel Craig. I love the physicality that he brings to the role. He looks like out of all of them, he looks like he would be the most legit spy, brutish kind of guy. Like, I can't take Roger Moore seriously, you know, as a spy. He's just this doddering old grandpa running around like, oh, ladies.
Fun fact. Hello, ladies. Wants to shag.
Was he the one that dressed up like a Chinese guy by just putting on a black wig and like fake eyebrows and he was supposed to be Asian? Or is that Sean Connery?
Yeah, that sounds like some Roger Moore shit. Fun fact, Roger Moore ran 0 times in any of the films that he was in. I think he was in like 5.
Wow.
He didn't like how he looked in quick movement.
Agreed.
And so that's always a body double when if he's moving quickly in any fashion.
Like Roger Moore to me seems like he's more suited to be a Q, you know?
For sure.
Just by his looks.
And I think I would agree with you. It sounds like kind of a cop out to like movie fandom, but I would agree that Daniel Craig is my favorite Bond as well. I remember when Casino Royale came out and my dad was in his, you know, he was born in 1951. So he was 11 or 12 when Dr. No came out. So, I mean, he's a huge fan of all of the Bond movies. And I remember he said to me, now that is fucking James Bond. Like, he's a guy who looks like he could hurt someone and it's less ridiculous. Right. And they had thought that through in their casting. So, you know, he became a more physical, gritty Bond, and it was an interesting take, but it made it more realistic. Now, you mentioned earlier, and Skyfall is a huge example, but I think the franchise as a whole was a product of the gritty realism they were trying to enter into all fantastical stories. Mm-hmm. And so starting with The Dark Knight, right? Or Batman Begins, Batman, really.
Yeah.
And I think that you can see James Bond in many ways as a superhero. And so Casino Royale was their attempt to like, okay, how could this really work? What would it really be like? Okay, he'd have to be in extreme physical condition, right? So blah, 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 blah.
Pierce Brosnan was shredded. What are you guys talking about?
I like Pierce Brosnan.
He's handsome and fit, but he's by no means shredded.
Now, for what it's worth, James Bond is the gentleman spy. Gentleman comes before spy.
But that's what I think Daniel Craig really walks this tightrope of, you know, he could bench 280, but he's also got the, like, you know, when he straightens his cufflinks and winks at the lady, you really get that too. Like, you feel like he does know his wine and his cars. And, you know, he prefers his Walter PPK and his Aston Martin, but he can also box, you know, and it's all believable.
I also love the thing I love about Craig. And I think the reason that he has a leg up for me personally, as opposed to the other James Bonds, is because, you know, A, I think overall his movies are better. Like, Pierce Brosnan, I think, is a great Bond, but, like, I only really like one of his movies.
Which one?
GoldenEye.
You didn't like Tomorrow Never Dies?
I, honestly, the only thing I remember is the bad guy was a news mogul.
I don't remember anything about anything but GoldenEye either.
But, like,
other than Halle Berry's and what, Die Another Day?
Die Another Day, yeah. That's when they made a Korean guy into a white guy. Yep. But also the thing I love about it is it's the most honest interpretation of a character like that, because, like, James Bond, if you really sit back and look at the character as a whole, the character is a fucking monster. Like, he's just a maniac, terrifying, awful person. And the Daniel Craig version's like, yeah, so he's dope. but the other ones, there's this air of, like, ah, I'm really not that bad once you get to know me.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You know?
Kids back.
You know?
No one really answered me. You left me out there on the grapevine to die.
So let me see.
Another day.
Let me see what you think about this. Of all the Bonds, who do you think is the deadliest? Meaning, who literally has the highest body count on screen, has killed the most people?
So I cheated, so I know this one. I saw this earlier.
I don't know.
Andy, just guess. And let me give you a hint. It is your first instinct. Well,
it's your first instinct. Do you have the actual number, Chris?
I do, I think.
I'm going to say Timothy Dalton.
It is actually Pierce Brosnan.
Really?
Who is World's Not Enough? One of the films he killed... 133 people, or maybe that's through all. No, that's through all four of his films, right? 133 people.
Yeah, 135 people across four films.
Yep.
With an average of 33.8 kills per movie.
Not as many as John Wick, though. I'll just go ahead and throw that out there.
So he's the 37-0.
Yes,
got him.
Also, fun tidbit: GoldenEye was the origin of two things. Judi Dench as M, and the first female M, and the best M by a long shot.
Agreed.
And what else? Sean Bean's legacy of dying in every film.
Was that it? Was that the second thing?
I just made that trivia up.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So yes. Yeah. Thought that was fun.
That was
Alex.
Dude, GoldenEye was very good. I did rewatch GoldenEye around the same time that I rewatched all the Daniel Craig movies last year, and I was laughing so hard because there's, like, spots on the lenses in the first opening, like, scenes. I had to freeze it, and I screen grabbed. I'm like, how did they let that pass? There's a very bad spot on the lens for this shot. This is terrible.
Who do you think is the most alcoholic Bond?
I also looked this one up too. I'm sorry.
Damn,
God, you guys cheat.
I was looking
at you cheat.
I was looking at
you. You said you weren't.
Say Sean Connery.
It is Daniel Craig taking spots number 1 and 2. So Inspector, he consumed 25 drinks, and Casino Royale is number 2, but I don't have the number.
Less than 25.
Yes. Yes.
But more than one.
Actually, so I'm gonna spit my little trivia at you. You mentioned Judi Dench coming out in GoldenEye.
Judi D.
So obviously she's been in the franchise for so long. She has been in 8 James Bond movies, which makes her, and this is counting her cameo in Spectre. So they're counting that. And that makes her the actor with the 4th most appearances in James Bond movies. Could you guys second a guess as to maybe who is the 3rd, 2nd, and 1st?
Most tenured
member of James Bond movies? I will give you a hint. None of them are James Bonds.
I was going to say, first you have to tell us if any of them are Bond.
No, none of them are James Bonds.
I would say the guy who played Q.
He is number one, Desmond Lewin.
I didn't know how to pronounce his last name, so I didn't want to try.
Yeah, he was in 17 movies.
God damn, Q.
God damn.
God damn.
Was it to his death, or they would have probably...
Well, close to his death. There's actually that famous scene, I think in Die Another Day, where it's his last movie.
I think so, yeah.
Where he pretty much hands the keys over to John Cleese, who becomes the new Q for those movies. Do you remember that John Cleese was Q in James Bond movies? I
completely forgot about that.
And he was just a bumbling idiot for the most part.
You would have been better as John Goodman.
That would have been awesome.
Well, James, we got this over here. The pan, it explodes.
Does anyone around here know where I put my gadgets? That was the worst John Goodman impersonation.
You sounded like Wolf the Muppet.
Well, you know, I like to play piano, and then sometimes I will construct a car that shoots oil slicks and trips everybody up.
That's an Andy impersonation. My second guess, and I don't know the actors, but it has to be another M, would be either in spot 2 or 3.
That would be 3. That was Bernard Lee, who played in 11 movies.
And then Moneypenny.
Yep. Lois Maxwell, who played Moneypenny in 14.
Her name is Smaxwell?
Maxwell.
Oh, okay. Lois Maxwell. Bam. Okay. Cool.
Lois Maxwell.
But what do you guys think overall about Daniel Craig's movies?
I really like them, and I've just watched all 4 of them. So I have it. Steve, you impressed me because you hadn't seen them, and it's been recently, but still about 6 months. But so I watched Quantum of Solace, which is regarded as one of the worst of the newest 4, along with Spectre. But I watched it right after Casino Royale. And it's interesting when you binge them. Quantum of Solace picks up immediately following the end of Casino Royale, like literally within hours of the last frame of Casino Royale, it just starts right away. And so it's almost like 1 3.5-hour movie. And so when you watch them back to back, it's not that bad of a movie. As you said, Steve, as soon as I text you about it, I started to say that. And you were like, honestly, Quantum's not bad if you consider it as a continuation of Casino Royale, but it's pretty bad in isolation. So that is interesting. I had the same experience.
Did you know that in between that? So the, like you said, Quantum opens immediately. It's like the same shot, the same scene that ends Casino Royale, where he shoots Mr. White in the leg.
And yeah. And then they like drop him in a chair.
Yeah. So in between those two movies, they lost a couple sponsors, product placement sponsors. They also got a different wardrobe specialist. So James Bond, his suit changes, even though it's supposed to be the same suit and watch. He goes from a 3-piece suit to an open suit.
I did not notice that. He just always looks damn snazzy. That makes perfect sense. And I think I knew at one time that he would have really high end, like suit and jewelry people dressing him.
It's costume
like,
hey, design.
People are going to dress like James Bond. That makes perfect sense. I, in fact, want to dress like James Bond, but I can't afford to.
Yeah. No.
His shirt always stays tucked
in. And mine would untuck, and I would just take it off. Like, he's always wearing the tie still. It drives me crazy. Like, 11:30 at night, the lady will walk in after he's killed 16 people, and he should be getting ready for bed.
Oh, is this Pierce Brosnan?
His PJs.
He shouldn't be wearing any clothes, let's be honest. And he's still got a full, not even like a tie where he's pulled the knot down to let his neck breathe. No, he's still got it pushed all the way up. Just, and he looks comfy and snug
in it.
Still
wearing the jacket, too.
Sometimes, but even if not, it's like, how is that tie still comfy? That must be perfectly tailored. Damn it.
Square hasn't moved an inch.
I'm so jelly.
Well, that's why most of these movies, they're pretty much funded by product placement.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's those suit designers and watch
cars.
Cars. Well, hell, even was it No Time to Die? Is having had a problem because all of the gadgets and stuff that they used to originally film it are now outdated. And so they had to like CGI them, the new products in.
This is 5G.
This is the new thing.
Bond, we've fitted out your watch with 5G technology.
Yeah, like super terrible AR. Yeah. Or whatever. Yeah, AR, right?
Alternate reality? Augmented reality? I don't think you meant
that thing you use with your phone where you put
fucking dialogue.
ADR.
I couldn't come up with the D.
Audio. You've forgotten the D.
Come up with the D. God damn it.
As usual.
All the ladies want to be on D.
Okay. Bond. So let's do this now. This will be fun. Let's rank the theme songs for each film. So as a refresher, the 2006 movie Casino Royale, the song was Chris Cornell.
Oh, man. I should have brought up little snippets of each one.
You can do that now, and we can, with the power of editing, make me sound prepared, or just let it be endearingly unprepared.
Someone stop me, because no.
That's actually a clip of scaring the fuck out of me, dude.
So this is the Chris Cornell one, right? Casino Royale. You know my name?
If you take a
gotta have some of the singing, though.
Here it comes, here it comes. Is this just Chris Cornell for you?
If you take life, do you
pretty good. Pretty good, right?
It's great. Then this Alicia like Keys and Jack White for Quantum of Solace.
I gotta say, the instrumentals, great.
This is my favorite genre of music. So
I just wish that Jack White wasn't singing in this. They have Alicia Keys.
Yeah, the singing is what
Jack White sings.
The singing is what brings this one down for me, because I do like the drumming and
it's the lyrics too. Because I had subtitles on and I was like, ugh.
Yeah. Here we come. Oh, maybe not. Here we come.
When do you sing? Sing, Jack White. Do it.
It's coming.
There's right? another one of those.
Now. Oh, and then some symphonic.
Oh, here we go. Here it is.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm out.
I like that.
See, I'm okay with that. It's when they're singing together and they're both hitting the same pitch during the chorus where I'm like, eh.
I just don't like the whole, like, it sounds weird, the diction of how they're singing that.
I like it.
Very Jack White-esque.
Yeah, man. All right, but I'm a huge White Stripes fan. The only thing I like more than White Stripes is Black Keys.
Oh.
Adele with Skyfall, the legendary Adele.
Let the sky fall.
That's not how it sounds at all, bro.
A much more classical, I think, Bond-esque theme. You got the horns and the trumpets. That's not quite as, you know, breaking the mold like the Chris Cornell and Jack White, Alicia Keys version is. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going places. But we got Adele, and she has the voice of an angel, you know?
This spawned a decade for me and my family of walking around the house going, Skyfall. And I didn't start that, as goofy as I am.
I mean, it's who doesn't love Adele, right?
I think this is the only one that became a constant radio hit.
Mm. Yeah, I think this is the most successful one. Like
Sam Smith's won an Oscar or two. I don't know if Adele's did.
Has to be the most successful one, right?
Live and let die.
Well, I was more talking about the Bond versions. Oh, okay. Or Daniel Craig versions.
The Bond versions. I'm talking about them, Andy. The Bonds.
The Bond.
And then finally, with Spectre, Sam Smith. Dibs on Skins.
Oh, yeah.
With the smash hit, Dibs on Skins.
So this one won Oscars?
I mean, somebody... Carlos, our tech, please fact check me. Carlos does not exist, which is why I'm frequently wrong.
Dude, don't say that. He's right there.
Not at the table, Carlos.
I gotta be honest with you. This is my least favorite. I hate this song.
Spoiler alert, I agree.
Yeah. I hate the song so much.
I agree.
It's really bad.
So I'll go first, because I think I'm going to be the only one that says this.
Maybe we should go around and say, what's our 4, 3, 2, 1?
Okay, my 4, Sam Smith.
Same.
By a mile.
Yeah.
Same. Okay, we all agree on that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, my 3, Alicia Keys and Jack White.
Agreed.
Adele.
Okay. You just shook. I lost all respect for Andy.
Adele
is going to show up and beat the shit out of you.
I just don't like the song.
Hot take, the symphonic behind Sam Smith is what carried him to that Oscar, because that was incredible.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The background. The background song
again,
is
great. Like, his vocals are great in it, but like, I don't like the song. So
my number 2, Chris Cornell.
Oh my God, Chris, we are the exact same.
Number two, Alicia Keys, Jack White.
My number one by a fucking mile is Adele.
Yeah, I hate to be that basic bitch, but I'm with you.
Yeah, I'm going to have to disagree with you guys there. Chris Cornell has probably the greatest voice of all time, and he fucking crushed it in that song. No,
he did. Like, I love Chris Cornell's song.
He's got
song.
One of the most iconic voices of all time, mm-hmm. which sounds that way because of a vocals cord surgery that he had.
I mean, he always sounded like that. You listen to, like, Temple the Dog and shit.
It was early in life. He said it at a live show. Like, the reason why I sing like this is because my shit's fucked up. And then he said he was awesome.
He has more like dynamic to his voice than so many people. He can do so much.
He's incredible.
So but much. He's not like a one note turkey or whatever they're called.
Yeah, he's definitely not a one note turkey. Here's my stupid opinion. I think that the Chris Cornell song is amazing. I'm a huge Soundgarden fan. Mm-hmm. Even Temple of the Dog's two bangers are fucking bang bangers in my mind, mm-hmm. right? However, I mean, also probably one of the world's only big Audioslave fans still around.
I fucking love Audioslave.
But I think it is the least Bondy song of the group, right? Like it is atonal. Like Chris Cornell's voice with a Bond film is just weird to me. And I saw a tweet that said, how the fuck do we get from Bond? Daniel Craig as Bond took us all the way from Chris Cornell to Billie Eilish. And I was like, oh, holy shit.
Doing that.
Oh, I know. Yeah, we didn't rank Billie Eilish.
I haven't heard it because I'm a spoiler reverse person.
Oh, you haven't heard it at all?
I don't know.
That song's been out for a year and a half.
I know. I'm so excited to see
really
the movie.
It's really good.
I bet when I heard she was doing the song, because I'm such a big fan of Adele, I was like, fuck yeah, she's going to have the perfect sultry, breathy Bond song.
I don't know if I definitely can't put her above Adele, but she would be fighting with Chris Cornell for second. So it's between those two for set two and three, because I do love all those songs. I mean, really, the drop off for me is like, I don't like the Jack White song, and I really don't like what I don't even remember the fucker's
Sam
name.
Sam Smith.
I really don't like his song at all. I just think he sounds annoying. I don't, it's like nails on a chalkboard to me, is his voice. But
I will say this, I prefer my Bond song to be sung by a woman. Mm-hmm. What, take that for what you will. I just prefer that.
Live and Let Die. You love that one?
I cannot believe I knew you were going Chris Cornell number one. You said that earlier, but I just can't believe you put Adele below Alicia Keys and Jack White.
It's purely because I don't like the song. You know what I mean? Like it's not about, so like we were saying when we were listening to it, I think that it was a massive mistake to have Jack White sing the chorus with Alicia Keys, to have them, like alternate on the verses and stuff. I think that's wonderful. But when they bring in like the combined vocals where they're singing at the same pitch, I think that it was an extreme mistake. And that only happened because of Jack White's name and not because of his talent as a singer. And I think that completely undermined what was otherwise a phenomenal song. And so I base my list purely on like, is it a banger? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the Chris Cornell one, I rock out to that.
Yeah. Like,
never mind the fact that it's
that song will get you hyped.
That it's a James Bond song. I'm never going to look up the Skyfall song when I'm riding around in the car. You know what I mean? It's just not my style.
I did listen to the Adele album quite a lot.
Did you? It was that on one of her albums?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's just, it's a question of like style for me. And
sure,
also when you were talking about like, it doesn't fit for Chris Cornell to be the James Bond song guy. I think that was intentional because it was supposed to
set
be like, exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, one, set it apart, but two, like this was for Casino Royale. It was supposed to be like the grittier, unexperienced James Bond. And so it made sense to have like the 90s grunge guy do the vocals.
What if they went further with
it? That's the thing too, is I think Adele, because Skyfall is definitely the quote unquote return to form for Bond, because that's the movie that starts bringing back Q and Moneypenny and gadgets and the car. And so it made sense to quote unquote return to form by having a more traditional
Adele. Ooh, you guys are fucking deep diving into these thought processes behind the opening songs. Mm. What if they try to go darker and grittier in the next iteration of Bond to top Daniel Craig? And as soon as the lights come on in the theater, it just goes, wow. And it's disturbed.
Oh my God, please.
That'd come on, get up. It. Come on, go down with the Bondness.
And so then, like, they brought in Sam Smith because they're like, we need to suck for a
isn't
second
that
before.
Dude dead?
No.
The disturbed guy? No.
No.
I don't think so.
I just saw.
Oh, I'm thinking of Drowning Pool. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just saw a video of him playing a live show and still playing that song. from a day. It was rough. Yeah, it was rough. What was I going to say? Oh, the graphics of those sequences. I don't know if you guys have like a good memory of them, but they are phenomenally done and highly entertaining, especially coupled with like being interested in what the song is. My favorite, I think, has got to be Casino Royale. What they did with the cards I thought was really unique, but they're always beautiful.
Even I can't even remember the guy's name. Something Smith. What's his
name? Sam Smith. Jesus Christ.
The most boring fucking name ever. I'm Scoots sorry.
Magoot. I know you know no one close to you in life named Sam, and so therefore it's hard to remember.
You might as well just be named John. Like even that title sequence is really gorgeously animated with like the tentacles and stuff in the background and everything. Yeah. And they all knock it out of the park in the animation department.
So whatever company's in charge of doing those, props to you. I know you're a listener streaming things and we salute you. Here's to you, Bond opening credits graphic people.
Crack open a cold one.
Yeah. Okay, so... what else do I got here? I already said that. So let's talk a little bit about, before we wrap up, the next Bond. So, within a week, a little less than a week, we'll see the final iteration of Daniel Craig as James Bond. And I think I'm going to be very sad. I had a weird moment or two watching the four movies back to back. There was a part, Bond did something fucking sexy. He seduced a woman. He shot a guy. And then that theme song.
He fixed his suit. After doing something badass.
He jumped in a boat, took off, and then out of nowhere, it was like... And I fucking started weeping. Like, not hardcore, but like a... like a caught in my chest. This has been something... It's been a huge part of my life, my entire life. You know, this is why this franchise will never go away. And so, you know, it is an important thing. It's a cultural figurehead, right? So who do you think is going to take up the mantle in the future? And you've probably done some research and know who's in the running.
Think or want?
Both.
Okay.
Dude, I still want Idris Elba.
That was going to be my answer.
I know that's kind of like
Idris Elba,
the quote unquote go-to for a lot of people, but I just think Idris Elba is so cool and I want him in good movies.
Is that's the want, right?
That's the want.
That's the want.
I don't think he has a chance in hell.
Same. He's too old now.
Yeah, his age would put him at Craig's age when he did Spectre, I think.
Yeah.
So.
But I would love it.
I think he would do a phenomenal job. Mm-hmm. I really think that, I don't know how to pronounce it. I don't know if he's French or what. I haven't done any research. I'm a piece of shit. But like Reggie Jean Page, the guy from Bridgerton, would be a phenomenal Bond.
Who does he play in Bridgerton?
Super young. The Duke.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
I think he would be a phenomenal, I don't know what his physicality is. He'd be a more traditional Bond as far as like, a little less gritty than Daniel Craig. But I think he would be phenomenal. But apparently Tom Hardy's the front runner right now.
Tom Hardy is who I think it will be.
Interesting.
He's the right age.
I just don't see him committing to that.
He absolutely has the physicality and he absolutely has the sex appeal.
He's like, committed everything to Venom, about him
works
so.
For Bond.
Just saying.
Yeah, but him being in Venom really throws a wrench in what I'm about to say. But he's one of those people that typically likes to stay free for quirky, weirder, smaller things, right?
Sure.
And he's been working with Steven Knight a lot, with like Locke and that show nobody liked where he wears the top hat. And I was super excited for it and it sucked.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about? I forget the name.
The Babadook.
I wish.
That was a really weird show. I fucking forgot about that.
I read an article that said that Tom Hardy is an obvious choice and therefore would be a mistake because if you try to keep the gritty, real Bond the way that it is, which is what Tom Hardy would do, it would be less interesting. I don't know if that's something I agree with, but I thought it was interesting.
I read that, so this was someone who apparently was up for the role at the same time as Daniel Craig, but they deemed him too young at the time, so they didn't go with him. But I think it would be an interesting choice, and that would be Henry Cavill. Henry Cavill?
Yeah.
I don't want to see that. I don't know why.
Okay.
Okay.
He doesn't have that sex appeal for me in a
he's
weird
Geralt,
way.
He's Geralt. He's Superman.
Put him in a mustache from Mission Impossible Fallout.
Yeah.
I think that is...
He fucking cock loads his arms before he fights.
Yeah, that shit's pretty dope. If he did that in fucking...
And he's been in Mission Impossible. Yeah, he's everywhere.
He's everywhere, baby. Maybe that's why I want him in there. I just love him in Mission Impossible.
I just looked at a list and it said Richard Madden, a kid that was in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Hard no.
It's a bit young.
Rob Stark?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Kit Harington wouldn't be bad.
I think there has to be somebody.
Of the two of them, I think Kit Harington would be better.
I think if it's not Reggie Jean Page or Tom Hardy, it should be somebody.
A no name?
We don't even fucking know. Right. Because Daniel Craig had been in a few things. He was a theater actor. Maybe if I was a paid film critic at the Chicago Tribune, yeah, I would have known who he was. But I didn't know who he was in 2006. I had seen him in
Layer Cake.
Yes. Before that. Yeah, I hadn't seen Layer Cake yet, though.
And when they announced it, like, oh, it's the guy from Layer Cake. Oh, hell yeah. That'll be cool.
Exactly.
He was great in that movie.
It's got to be a oneer like Reggie Jean Page. Mm-hmm. And I've said his name so many times that was really brazen of me for not knowing how to pronounce it. So somebody's eyes are twitching out there somewhere.
Jean.
Like I very confidently said that Justice Smith was Will Smith's son. I even said, listening back to that episode, obviously Will Smith's son.
Clearly.
Turns out it is not. But I've had a blast with Craig throughout history. A few things.
Oh, go ahead.
Steve's gesturing. No. I'm about to take us in a whole different direction.
I was going
to
say, well, have we talked about like kind of similar to what we did with the Bond songs? Do we want to rank the other Craig Bond movies? Like which ones we like most?
I think I know.
What about, hang on. Jason Hang? Statham.
No.
He's too old, isn't he?
He's too Jason That's Statham-y.
Well, how old is Jason Statham?
How old is James Bond?
Hey, you know what? You make some great fucking points.
No, you know what I mean? Like fucking Peter Capaldi followed up Matt Smith with The Doctor. Anything can happen.
It's just about being able to get 5 or 6 movies out of a guy.
I don't know why, but I feel like if you put Jason Statham in a James Bond movie, it's just... It's just going to be, what's that fucking crazy-ass
Jason
movie he was
Statham's
in?
Like 54.
He's just going to become Crank.
Jason Statham's like 54.
Well, how old was Sean Connery when he hung up the martini?
I think his last film was 1983.
So he was like 1,000?
I think he was probably late 40s.
Speak for yourself, young buck.
By the way, Sean Connery.
I've been here this whole time and none of you have asked me for my opinion on Daniel Craig. He's a Nancy boy. That's what I'm saying.
He actually spoke very highly of Daniel Craig's portrayal, sir.
He treats the women like equals.
I don't like it.
I don't even let them look me in the eyes. They look me straight in my beautiful eyes. I give him a good slap in the mouth.
Sean Connery died almost exactly 1 year today. I will raise my water and Andy's beer to that, sirs. Clink, 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 clink. Cheers, clink, cheers clink. To you, Sean Connery.
To Sean Connery.
There
and
can
his
only
tits.
Be one.
I call it the quickening.
That's what we call it when we have a new James Bond.
So let's rank the Craigs, okay? Craigs. My number four.
Daniel, number one.
My four is going to be Spectre.
Also Spectre.
My three is going to be, shocking to no one, Quantum of Solace.
Also Quantum.
Ooh.
My two is going to be Skyfall.
Casino Royale.
Wow, Andy, damn. I agree with Chris. My two is, you know what?
It's a very close race between Skyfall and Casino.
What is the metrics of this? Is it like, what do we think is the best movie or the one we enjoy watching the most?
That is the same thing in my mind.
It is not the same thing in my mind.
I'm going with the better movie.
The better movie? Okay, yeah. So then Skyfall is two.
Okay.
I can sit down. I think I can rewatch Skyfall easier than I can rewatch Casino Royale.
I
think Casino Royale is fucking amazing.
Mm-hmm. I think that they have two opposite things going on where... The last act, like Casino Royale, has a definite endpoint, and then it goes on for another 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Which kind of is like, now we're in Quantum of Solace territory, and it's weird. Whereas I think Skyfall is a struggle-ish, not a struggle, but it doesn't get amazing until, you know, the second half of Act 2 going on to the Act 3. For me.
Mm. That's fair.
So it's weird. Oh, they're kind of oppo on that. But they're both amazing. It's such a close race. And I thought about it back and forth a bunch.
Yeah, because Casino Royale has the best, strangely enough, even though it's the oldest movie out of all of them, it has, I think, the best action in it.
Mm-hmm. And that's also parkour race when he's chasing the bomb guy.
Dude, I thought that when I was watching Casino Royale earlier, I was like, that's so 2006. Like, of course he's doing parkour.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's so great because the dude's doing this amazing parkour and then James Bond's just running through drywall.
Jumping through the wall like, motherfucker. Like,
and then there's that great scene where he's on the tarmac and he blows the guy up with a bomb. Mm-hmm. And it's got really great action. And then the last half of the movie is just super high stakes tension between people playing a poker game. Mm-hmm. And then Mathis in the background going, there's 20 million in the pot. just so people like me who are idiots who don't know how to play poker, and I'm like, is that good?
Is that a lot of money?
Why is he crying blood? Is he sad? and then it's got the best, I think,
what's villain? He gonna do with that rope?
So that Steve, Andy, who do you think the best Bond villain in the Craigverse is? There's really only two contenders in my mind, which is Javier Bardem as Silva and Mads Mikkelsen as La Chifra.
Mads, for sure.
I think I got to go Mads Mikkelsen as well, but I do love Javier Bardem's performance.
As do I.
And I didn't think Christoph Waltz was bad. I don't know what anybody's talking about. It's just that
he's not bad. It's just they don't write that character well.
Also, he's weirdly like, so when they introduce him, he's like in shadow and it's all menacing. And then like every other scene, he's like extremely brightly lit.
Yeah.
And it super undermines
any kind of
menace that
Christoph
he has.
Waltz here.
It's bizarre how he's lit throughout the movie.
The shadow entrance is actually an homage to Ernst Blofeld's character in the original Bond films.
Oh, cool.
He was always like covered in shadow like that, you know,
which is like Dr. Claw in Inspector Gadget.
Yes. So that's why they did that,
which I love. But from then on, it's like they hit him with a key that's like super overexposed. It's bizarre.
Yeah,
I hate it.
It's me, Christoph Waltz.
I think the biggest problem with Spectre, I'm not one of those people, by the way. I kind of like that it is this giant arc and narrative. Mm-hmm. I think one of the coolest things about Craig's Bond is that he's sort of they really reckon with what it would do to a man's psyche to, you know, murder dozens of people and not be able to get close to anyone and not be able to trust anyone. So he just becomes this increasingly beaten down drug addict, alcoholic, you know, which is probably what it would actually be like. So I think that's fun.
That's a good time.
Which they could do without connecting the villains and stuff so much. But that Spectre is where they went off the rails. And mm-hmm. It's like,
oh, they have all touched this ring.
Because Quantum was cool, right? Mm-hmm. And then, because nowadays you don't just fight the Russians. You know, it used to be easy to make a spy movie because like, oh, we hate Russia or we hate China. But now it's like, it's always got to be some amorphous individual organization.
Well, Spectre was actually created by Ian Fleming because he knew the Cold War was ending and that they had to like evolve from, you know, your stereotypical Russian Soviet villains into something more nefarious that isn't quite, you know, it's a shadow organization from all countries. Mm. The tentacles reach everywhere.
But after
good pool, man.
After Skyfall, it becomes nonsensical. Like, oh, because Silva had this like really interesting personal connection with M.
Silva's almost completely removed from the rest of the Craigverse, but then Spectre comes along and
then they're like, no, like, he was working for us.
I am the author of your pain.
What? I thought it was Silva because he hated M. No, I made him do that because I hate you.
He was on my payroll.
What?
Hello, Christoph Waltz.
I hate that he had this personal connection with Bond. And I think
that's a bingo.
That's a bingo. how do you say? That's where it lost me completely. Like, oh, I was your childhood brother and you took my toys. I was getting to play with all the time without you.
You took away my fascia.
I killed daddy.
I was really only there like 2 weeks.
That's why it's amazing that to this day, Mads Mikkelsen is still the best villain out of all of them, because really Mads Mikkelsen is the lowest player on this whole Spectre totem pole. Like, even within the movie, he is the bad guy of. He is just this, like, even worse guys are going to kill me, so I got to win at Casino.
You know, sure. Win at Casino.
I have to win at Casino.
I have to win at Casino. I am Sads Mikkelsen.
Also, this is dumb, but so I do play the stock market now. I didn't, obviously, when I was 17 in 2006. And so...
Stonks.
A lot of the plot didn't make sense to me and didn't matter But there's a scene in Casino Royale where he takes the like African warlord's money, which is $100 million, and he calls his stockbroker and he tries to buy a bunch of puts on this company. He says short another 100 million shares or whatever, right? And so I don't know what puts were. I didn't know what shorting was. But I immediately understood now that I do know what that shit is. Oh, he's taking the other guy's money and he's placing a bet that this particular company will go down in value, and he's going to do a terroristic act to make sure that it does. Mm-hmm. Didn't understand any of that. I'm just like, why is he blowing up that plane? Where'd all the money go? I don't care. James Bond's cool. But now I'm like, this is actually really clever, right? So yeah. Just want to throw that out there. That's what goes on.
I have a tiny little tidbit, just random. Hideo Kojima once approached Mads Mikkelsen about making a Mad Max game starring him. And he wanted to call it Mads Max.
Swear to God. Hideo Kojima never changed.
He's such a goofball. And he's always got these film opinions. Yeah. He tweeted about how awesome Midnight Mass was. And I thought, weren't we talking about Hideo Kojima's opinion on a movie like 3 weeks ago as well?
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Hideo's great. I do think we would be remiss if we didn't actually kind of also bring up, you know, who are our favorite, you know, Bond girls. Not because it has changed in this franchise, because it's for so many years, for most of the franchise's legacy, a Bond girl was like, who's the hottie in this movie?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, I feel like another thing that Daniel Craig's Bonds do is they actually, like, there are a bunch of women in this franchise that actually step up and do more than just be, I'm something to look at. Mm-hmm. Definitely those characters do exist. I don't want to say they've completely gotten rid of that trope, but
they're getting better.
I think we would be remiss if we don't talk about Eva Green's Vesper.
They do fridge like four of them, but yeah. Other than that, they have come a long way. My favorite is far and away Lea Seydoux, just because I have such a high respect and I'll just say crush on her.
I love her as an actress.
Does Kristen Stewart know about
she's
this?
She's amazing. I think that she has no chemistry with Daniel Craig whatsoever.
I agree, but I like how capable she is. In contrast with a lot of the other women, they're kind of damsels in distress. Even the fellow agent in Quantum of Solace
is Strawberry Fields.
Yes. is just like a desk job worker. And she gets like killed and covered in oil and for no reason other than to piss Bond off, which
bring wood and oil.
Though that is one of my probably the funniest scene that maybe isn't funny to anyone else is Quantum of Solace of all things. She brings him to this shitty little hotel and he's like bougie, right? And he walks in, looks around and walks back to the car. And he's like, I'm not staying there. And she's like, but you have to. And he's like, I'm definitely not staying there. I'd rather fucking die. And she's like, but it fits our cover perfectly. We're teachers on sabbatical. It's all we could afford. And then he takes her to this super ritzy 5-star hotel, angrily walks to the front desk and looks at the clerk and goes, hi, we'd like your best suite. We're teachers on sabbatical. And looks at her and goes, and we've just won the lottery. And he's like, oh, congratulations, sir. And he takes the keys and looks at her like, that's all you need, dumbass. I love his panache, right? Like he's constantly throughout the film like, okay, your name is Eugene Overschmidt and this is your cover. And then he'll walk up and be like, I'm Bond, James Bond. And they're like, what the fuck, man? He's going to figure it out anyway. Fuck him. You know, and I just love that about him. He's like a terrible spy because he's got such a huge swinging cock, but it works. Anyway, go on. Who's your favorite Bond girl, Steve?
Well, it's Eva Green as Vesper Lynn, just because I think the two of them have such great chemistry. Because so many of these movies hinge on that relationship, like how the relationship and then him losing her affects him so much. And it has these echoes that reverberate throughout the rest of the movies. And it hinges so much on the relationship that they fucking nail because they have such great chemistry. She challenges him as a character.
She does, like her wit matches his, because that's what's awesome about Craig's Bond and probably all of them, but the shit that he says is fucking fire. It's like, damn, I wish someone was writing my words. But like, she has the banter right back and they just have this delicious interplay and it's really cool.
So my favorite's going to be Ana de Armas once the
I was
going to
say that
100%, but until then it's Eva Green.
She's great.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, way to pick a villain, guys.
Was she a villain? Is she a villain?
I mean, she was working for her Argentinian boyfriend, who was actually a quantum spy, who was apparently really a Spectre spy. And
it's all bullshit, man.
She's the one that snitched on Bond and then got Mathis tortured because Bond thought it was Mathis and told Le Chiffre that he found out his tell.
Can we just say that he gets Mathis thrown to the fucking wolves, and then the next movie they're like, we're cool, and then he uses Mathis as a human shield and then dumps him in a dumpster.
I could not understand that scene at all. He's like, will you come with me? And Mathis is like, looks at his beautiful wife and his dope Italian villa that he's been bothering fucking nobody in for years, and he's like, sure. And then immediately just gets stuffed in a trunk. And then Bond picks him up. Yeah. And then he just gets shot while Bond's holding him. I didn't understand that at all.
He
looks at
him, he's like, we're cool, right? And Bond goes, we're cool. And then throws him in the fucking dumpster.
Is that any way to treat a friend? And he's like, he wouldn't care. I don't understand.
He would like it this way. Would he? I don't think that he would. I think he would have preferred to be on his villa with his family.
Or just leave him on the ground.
Yeah.
Why'd you throw him away? I don't understand. Cause fuck him.
He wronged me once.
And I will, I love Ralph Fiennes, but I will dearly miss Judi Dench. I was saying that earlier. Yes. She just had the cold bitch banter with James that I really appreciated. Mm-hmm. Take the shot.
It's weird because she did debut with Pierce Brosnan. Mm-hmm. But when I think of Judi Dench, I immediately think of her and Daniel Craig's interplay together because they work so well together. And obviously they made such a big point of making her a more maternal relationship with him, which I think really, really works, especially in Skyfall. And they actually give her a send off. Like, I can't think of any other character in the James Bond franchise where they actually really kind of sit and send a character off like that. Yeah. They kind of did with the original Q, but that was just like a scene. They didn't build a whole entire movie.
Around the leaving of him and the legacy that she would leave. And that was really cool. That's the lens through which I was watching it the whole time too. And I have a feeling that No Time to Die is going to be that for Daniel Craig. And I hope I cry.
It's supposed to be the longest James Bond, right?
It is, by a mile.
How long is it?
It's like 2 hours, 43 minutes or something.
Foo.
I think the longest current Bond is like an hour 50 or something.
No runtime to die, am I right?
There's certainly plenty of time to die, apparently.
two hours and 40 minutes worth of time.
Like, when I watched Logan, I completely watched it through the lens of Hugh Jackman's last performance as Wolverine. And made it powerfully sad.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
I expect that to happen with Daniel Craig in No Time to Die. I don't know. He might like
great show me didn't work out. I'm back.
Yeah, right. Oh, you liar. Anyway, I think that does that wrap up our coverage on Craig's Bond?
I think so.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week. We love you very much. My name is Chris.
Oh, I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
Happy streaming.
Steve can dance, Chris can jive, having the time of their lives.
Ooh. Ooh,
streaming things, watch that scene, dig in the streaming things.
Soon to be sued by ABBA.
Better lawyer up.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.